In this session, if you're in the right place, we are going to be discussing the issue in the first session between 9 and 11 of physician-assisted suicide. Now, as you know, what we try to do over the in planning these sessions, the committee looks at the events of the previous year and sees some of the issues that may be relevant to the practices of people's in terms of their own practice. Now, the issue of physician-assisted suicide, on one hand, there's a dichotomy here. In the halachic spectrum, I think it's easy to say that it's a non-starter and the discussion could be closed and therefore there isn't much to discuss. On the other hand, I think we have to be cognizant of two different aspects, and this is why we're bringing this to the attention of our experts this morning. The main issue is for those that are living in Canada, this was a very, very important year in that in February of this past year, the Supreme Court of Canada essentially struck down the law that prohibits physicians being involved in physician-assisted suicide. And what they have done is they've given the government 1 year, which so the clock is already ticking since February, in order to set new guidelines for physicians in terms of physician-assisted suicide. Going back in time, this goes back at least from a Canadian perspective to 1993, where the case was heard at the Supreme Court as well. So the background is not important from a legal point of view, but what is important is what has changed. In 1993, this same case came to the Supreme Court, and a woman with ALS who wanted to die was not given that right. And the court at that point in time said that physicians would not be allowed to do so and so on and so forth, and hence the industry that has developed in Europe. So on one hand, the question that has come about is, what has changed? And the answer is the popularity of this concept. So now, in terms of popular opinion, studies and polls have shown that 84%, again, this is Canadian numbers, are supportive of the notion of physician-assisted suicide. So the Supreme Court, although there is precedent in one direction, has other legal and obligations to address the issues that times are changing. And that's exactly what they've done. Now, what's going to happen in Canada now is, to some extent, something which a lot of the primary care physicians are concerned about, because what it's going to mean to their practice. We heard last night about, can you exclude someone who doesn't want to vaccinate? Can you exclude a smoker from your practice? And we've heard different issues. We heard last night some of the talks. Certainly from a legal point of view, the question is going to be, do I not want to get involved and will I be obligated to get involved? So that's one side. So we have the halachic issue, which is probably a no-brainer. We have the medical practice issue, which is another side. But here's the other side of this coin. The other side of this coin is, I'm sure others have gone. I went to a shir one day. I was listening to a prominent rav in Toronto. And essentially his idea was that everybody must die with CPR. That's basically the nutshell of what I heard. And if you don't extend your life for every possible moment, which means at any given time, whatever it is you're going to do. So I thought to myself, this really means, and that's what he was saying. So somewhere between these two poles, we have to basically address where the halacha comes in. Now, today what we have is a panel of three speakers. The first one will be Rabbi Dr. Glatt, who will be addressing the fact that physician-assisted suicide is not a new concept. It is something that we have found in biblical and Talmudic literature. So without further ado, I'll ask Rabbi Glatt to address this particular topic.
Okay, good morning, everybody. As always, it's a great honor for me to be on the same series of speakers with Rabbis Dr. Steinberg and Reichman, who are both wonderful Talmidei Chachamim and very, very knowledgeable. And I think looking through the slides that each of us has presented, I think there's a minimal amount of overlap. And what I was asked to do is to really talk not so much about the medical, and I'll leave that really to those two Rabbonim to speak about, but to give you more of a background in Tanakh and in some of the interesting tshuvos that have been written as how halacha views this concept, not specifically from the physician point of view, but from an overall halachic and hashkafic point of view. So I want to start off, we're in the 70th year since the liberation of the camps, Hashem Yimkom Domim, of all the holy tzaddikim that were killed during the Shoah. And one of the most horrific tshuvas that I have ever read is this tshuva from Rav Ephraim Oshri Zatzal, who was the Rav in the Kovno ghetto, who had no svarim with him really to speak about, and paskin so many horrific shilas based upon his godless and Torah, his encyclopedic knowledge. And these tshuvas were put together post the Shoah. He did survive. And in an amazing sefer, which I certainly recommend to everybody to look at some point in their lives, just to get a shtickle understanding, the most minimal understanding of what many of our parents or grandparents went through. I lost relatives in the Warsaw ghetto, my grandmother, Olea Shalom, many other extended family members, and all of us either directly, immediately were impacted by the Shoah, or certainly have relatives that were impacted by the Shoah. Growing up in a house of survivors, I understand a little bit, having not gone through it, but lived through the eyes of my parents and Nebuchadnezzar, all my grandparents, who I didn't have the opportunity to know because they all perished in the Shoah, what this idea of suicide means. And in this amazing tshuva, Rav Oshri was asked by an Erlich Obala boss on October 27th, 1941, 2 days before there was a horrific extermination of Jewish people known as the Black Day in the Kovno ghetto. And an Erlich Obala boss came to him. One of the leaders of the community asked him the following shaila. The Germans, Yimach Shemam V'Zichrom, weren't satisfied with just killing somebody. They needed to make sure that death was as painful as possible and was emotionally, not only physically, as painful as possible. And what they would do is kill the children in front of the parents and then kill the parents. Kill the wife in front of the husband and then kill the husband. And this Bala boss said, I cannot withstand that challenge. They're going to kill my wife and my children in front of me 2 days from now. Then they're going to kill me. I'm not going to have Kever Yisroel. Is it permissible for me to take my life today, have a proper kavura, and be spared from this unbelievable emotional, and then death, physical destruction in this world? Is that a halachically acceptable approach? None of us should ever be in a position that we have to ask or answer such a shaila. What did Rav Oshri say? He paskened. Even though this was a vaday, this wasn't, maybe the Germans will do this. This was a vaday. And Nebuch history shows us that this was a vaday. They killed children, bemazed, with absolutely not an ounce of compassion. They wouldn't have done this. They had tons of laws. I think there were 150 laws against cruelty to animals in Germany on the books at the time that I'm sure the Germans held 100% people accountable if they would do this to a cat. But if they did this to a yid, didn't count. No problem. So this is a vaday. This wasn't a safek shema bari situation. This is a vaday that he would be subjected to this rachmana litzlan horrific end. Rav Oshri Paskin, he's not allowed to commit suicide. Halacha le'maisa. He said, permitting suicide in such a case, I'm translating most of his tshuva here, would mean that we're giving in to the enemy. And it would be viewed as a terrible chilul Hashem. It would show a lack of emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu to save us. And then he adds, and I'll show you this in the actual tshuva in the next slide. He said, despite the horrifical events that occurred in Kovno, only three people in the entire city during this entire period of time committed suicide. And this is his exact words. I put it in Hebrew so you should see the pathos. Omnom yesh litzayin kan bigaon. Bigaon means with tremendous pride. The Jewish people, mi kamocha. Who is like the Jewish people? Ki lo hayu begeto kovna, mikrei ibud ledas, they didn't occur in the Kovna ghetto, situations of people killing themselves, suicide, zula shlosho anoshim, except for three people, and these people, rucham nofla bekirbam, they were depressed. Avo yesa yoshe ghetto, the thousands, the tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of other people that lived there, haminu be'emuno shleima, They had complete belief. Ki lo yitosh Hashem es amo. Hashem will never forsake us. V'yomar l'mishchise di. And he will eventually say, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is ready, enough. Kulam ha'minu b'vias ha'mashiach, the vast, vast majority. Kimat 100% of the people in the Kovna ghetto believed the Mashiach would come. And they wait, as we do every single day, for the ultimate salvation from such shilas as this. So in that very tragic backdrop, let's look how he came to his conclusion and what might be other alternative answers to that horrible shila. It should never be asked again. So the primary Torah source for all of this is the Pasuk in Bereishis in Parshas Noach. V'ach, and I put the V'ach in highlights over here because that's a drosha that we're going to make. V'ach es dimchem l'nafsho seichem edrosh miyad kol chaya edrishenu u'miyad ha'adam miyad ishochiv. The double roshon here is critical. Miyad ha'adam, from man, and from his brother. Miyad ishochiv. Edrosh es nefesh ha'adam. If you go take someone's life, you're going to be held accountable. The Medrash Rabbah, and I want to thank Rabbi Josh Flug. Some of these references, he makes it very easy for you to find the references. He has some very nice source sheets, so I want to thank him publicly for bringing to my easier attention some of these sources that I'm going to bring to you. So the Medrash Rabbah brings down, Ach is a drosh over here. Lo'avias chonek atzmo. This includes in this prohibition against taking a life, taking your own life. Person who commits suicide is over here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be Edrosh es nefesh ha'adam. You'll be held accountable. Yachol kishol, you might think that Shaul would also be held accountable. Talmud lomar, ach. The pasuk ach is always a miut. Ach is a miut. It limits a drasha. Yachol kichanani mishol v'azariah, you might have thought that this applies to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah throwing themselves in the famous Kivshon HaEish, Talmud Lomar Ach, that these are not included in this drasha. So what exactly does it mean that Shaul, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah are not included in this drasha? Did they have a heter to do what they did? So let's look at the sources. On this pasuk, the Ksav HaKabbalah, Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg, who lived 200 years ago. And he writes, and I gave you the entire thing, you can look at it at your leisure, but I'll only accent upon certain parts of it. As I pointed out, this kefil loshon, this double loshon, of Odom, Miyad Ho'odom, and Miyad Ish Ochiv, seems to be saying the same thing. So he points out that these are two different types of murder that are occurring over here. One is murder, cold-blooded murder. The apostle tells us, you're not allowed to murder somebody in cold blood. The other one is murdering them in warm blood. What does it mean in warm blood? It means that you're doing it out of mercy. You're doing it ish ochiv. You're a spouse. In Rahman al-Islam, you see your spouse of 55 years going through a very painful chemotherapy session that's not having much success. And you're bleeding for them. You're in pain for them. The famous Rav Ari Levin, When he goes with his wife to the doctor, everybody knows the story, and the doctor asks him, why are you here? And he says, our foot hurts. It was his wife's foot. That's the proper way a husband and wife should be. If something hurts one person, it should hurt the other one as much. And the spouse is suffering, looking at their spouse in terrible pain and agony. And there are doctors in Oregon, the doctors in other parts of the world that will be more than happy to help you put them out of that pain and suffering. L'shem Shemayim. You're not doing this because you're a wicked person. This isn't a cold-blooded murder. This is what we euphemistically call a mercy killer. So what does Halacha say about this? So the Ksav HaKabbalah writes, it is prohibited. This is why the Pasuk says, Miyad Ish Ochiv. To prohibit it cold and warm-blooded murder. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises, I will be doresh from you, edrosh miyad kol adam, even for a, quote, mercy killing. Let's look at what the Medrash Rabbah brought down, the stories this ach comes to be excluding the famous mice of Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah. The source for this is found in Daniel in the third perek. I picked out selected psukim from the perek. Ayin Shom, it's a beautiful perek. It's one of the most beautiful parakim in all of Tanakh. And of course, the Gemara comments on this quite a bit, as we'll see in a second. But basically, the pasuk tells us over here that the wicked Nebuchadnezzar made a decree that everybody had to bow down to his bust. Rabbi Reichman talked yesterday about the three-dimensional bust they made of Obama. Said nothing new under the sun. So Nebuchadnezzar, not that I'm putting Nebuchadnezzar and Obama necessarily in the same hekesh, but Nebuchadnezzar wanted everybody to bow down to him. He was an egomaniac. He made himself sort of as an avodah zara. The Gemara says he didn't really make himself as an avodah zara, and that's the simple teretz to why Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah technically were allowed to bow down to it, and they went lifnei meshuras hadin and didn't bow down to this bust of Nebuchadnezzar. But in any event, they refused, and they were thrown into the Kivshon Ha'esh, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu made, of course, the miracle, and Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah were saved. A beautiful medrash. We could discuss this medrash for hours. There's so many interesting nisim within the Nais, and so many dinim and ideas that we learn out from this, that it really is a beautiful story. The story is repeated later on in terms of Yoshua Kohen Gadol, when he was thrown into a Kivshon Ha'esh with two other people, and he said, well, I won't be saved because I don't have three people, and they threw in these two other Rishayim who caused the whole events. If anybody's interested, I'll be happy to discuss that medrash with them after the lecture. I don't have time right now. And this, of course, is also patterned after Avram Avinu being thrown into Kivshon Ha'esh. So what was the heter over here? Did they have a heter to be thrown into the Kivshon Ha'esh? They were essentially committing suicide. They were permitted, min ha-din. They were permitted to bow down to this bust because this is no different than going to the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, or I assume they have a similar memorial in Canada to hopefully to a person like Harper, who is a holy person, who is a great, great leader. And I hope they have a bust to him so people can go and acknowledge his righteousness. But in any event, did they have a heter? The answer is yes, they had an absolute heter. It wasn't Avodah Zarah. So what happened over here? So Tosos in Gittin brings down, and we'll see in a moment, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah that Tosos refers to. And he says, Tosos writes, Kovtsu kulam v'noflu sol chayom. In another situation over here, another tragic story, and this is the Kamtsu bar Kamtsu Gemara in Gittin, which talks about many other sad, terrible tragedies in our history, and the tragic case of the young boys and the young girls who threw themselves into the ocean rather than be subjected to the sexual improprieties that they would have been subjected to, both Mishkav Zohar and prostitution, and they threw themselves into the ocean and committed suicide. So Tosos on that remarks, in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which we'll see in a second, Mutav Shiyit Lenu Mishinitna. It says in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah that we'll read in a second that it's better for a person to allow himself to be hurt by men rather than to take his own life. Let HaKadosh Baruch Hu take your life, but you shouldn't take your own life. Hacha, what was the heter for Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah to essentially commit suicide by allowing themselves to be thrown into the Kivshon Ha'esh? Yireim hayu miyisurim. They were terrified that they would be tortured. And that is a major heter that Tosus brings down over here. Kedamrinon, il mole nigdu l'chanani Mishael v'Azariah, if Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah had been tortured, if they had been beaten, bow down and we're going to hit you, bow down, we're going to hit you, polchu l'tzalma. They would have eventually bowed down. They didn't have the wherewithal. They knew themselves. Every person knows their breaking point. And they weren't commandos, they weren't trained in the art of standing up to terror interrogation, and they felt they would have broken down, and they would have chas v'shalom worshipped this, and if the three Gedolei Yisrael had worshipped this Avodah Zarah, they felt it would have been a tremendous avla for Klal Yisrael. And the Akach hayu ma'anino son v'yohargino son. They felt that they would have been tortured and they would have been subjugated to terrible things and they would have fallen trapped to what the Nebuchadnezzar wanted, and they felt it was better to die than to allow that. Is this halacha l'maisa? So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah that Tosfos is referring to talks about a famous story where we find that the Tanoim were asked whether you're allowed to go and be Moser individuals over to the king because these are bad people. And they responded, Afato Psach Picha, the Dichonis Bohaish, Hanani Mishov Vazai were basing themselves on this Gemara, where Chanina ben Trajan was told he couldn't learn Torah, and he learned Torah, and he went and he was put to death because he was learning Torah. And they wrapped his body in fire. We all know the famous story. It's outlined over here. And they made him die a slow, horrible death. As Talmidim told them, open up your mouth so you'll die faster. You'll suffocate faster if you allow yourself to breathe in the noxious fumes. And what happened? He didn't do so. And as a result, his death was very painful and very slow. And he said to his Talmidim, no, I will not. Mutov shiit lenu, in the red, in the 4 or 5 lines at the bottom, Mutov shiit lenu mishenitna. It is better that HaKadosh Baruch Hu take my life, v'yichabel hu biatzmo, and I shouldn't kill myself. Even though he was suffering, even though it was horrific, even though it would be just for a few seconds, that chayi shoh, he felt, was absolutely a chiyuv on him to live rather than to die, even though he was suffering tremendously. And the story continues that the wicked executioner was so impressed by him that the wicked executioner did this. So the physician, so to say, in this situation, did act. The executioner acted over here, removed some of the blocks that were preventing Rav Chanina ben Trajan from dying faster, and he was promised by Rav Chanina ben Trajan that he would have Olam HaEmes because of this one act. And the bas kol at the end, when they both passed away, Rav Chanina ben Trajan, in Shemayim, they rang out that what he did was correct. What this executioner, what this captain of the guards did in allowing Rav Chanina ben Trajan to die faster was in fact lauded in Shemayim. What halacha l'maaseh ramifications does that have? Next story tells us about Avimelech and Shoftim and his sword bearer. An interesting story in Shoftim, not so well known. This is not the famous Avimelech from Chumash. Avimelech was a generic name. It's like Paro. Paro doesn't refer to one person. Paro is like president. It's like king. Some suggest Turnus Rufus is the same thing. Caesar is the same thing. Tsar is the same thing. These are words that just are titles and not an individual. You know, we tend to think of them as an individual because that's the way they're called. So Avimelech was killed in a battle by a woman who threw a stone at him, and she crushed his skull, but he didn't die immediately. So he called over to his sword bearer, the one who helped him carry his armor and his weapons, and he said, kill me, so people shouldn't say that a woman killed me. And his loyal armor bearer killed him. So Abimelech ben Gidon was a judge in Klal Yisrael, and he would have died imminently, and yet he hastened his death. How does Chazal view this? Another, I was asked to give an overview of Tanakh, so I'll give you all the questions, and then we'll try to come up with some answers at the end. Shimshon, everybody knows the famous story of Shimshon. It's also kedai to speak for hours on what Shimshon's havanas were. What was he thinking? How did he do what he did? He was a tremendous tzaddik. He was a tremendous gadol. You think of Shimshon as just being all brawn. He was also Talmud Chacham. He was also a gadol b'Yisrael. He was one of the shoftim. So he's not just, Mr. Atlas, Mr. Universe, Rambo. He was a great gadol b'Yisrael, and he took his own life. Famous statement, Vayomer Shimshon, Tomus Navshi im Plishtim. I am willing to sacrifice my life to go and kill all these Plishtim. He committed suicide. What does Halacha have to say about that? And finally, we talk about Shaul's death. You know, Melech Shaul was anointed by Shmuel Hanavi. Again, this week's parasha, Som Tosim Alecha Melech. Shaul was not a false king. Shmuel was anointed by Shmuel and his Beis Din, which is an essential for becoming a Melech B'Yisrael. Shaul was a true Melech B'Yisrael. If he hadn't committed various averos, we'd be talking about Moshiach ben Shaul. If Shaul hadn't lost his direction in some sort of way, and again, Shaul was a great tzaddik. The Gemara in Yuma says Shaul was greater than David. And the Gemara testifies that the Pasuk that says Shaul was head and shoulders, literally and figuratively, above everybody else in his generation, and his problem was he was too big a tzaddik. He had no skeletons in his closet. David HaMelech had plenty of skeletons in his closet. But Shaul HaMelech had no skeletons in his closet, and that led, Chazal say, somehow to his making the mistake that Itaka was able to kill David HaMelech and was able to do the things that he did that were considered incorrect, and Shaul HaMelech lost his ultimate kingship, and it didn't go over to his children. Like the Pasuk in this week's parasha says, that kingship is inherited to the children if the children are deserving. But only one of his sons, Ishbosheth, was zochah to be the king after him, and then that lineage totally stopped. It was totally abruptly abrogated. And Shaul was killed in the famous battle. The witches of Endor, the Mechashefa of Endor, told him that you're going to die tomorrow. And he brought up famous Shmuel HaNavi in the famous Maisa there. He brought him up through necromancy. And he brings up Shmuel HaMelech, and Shmuel HaNavi tells him, you're going to die. If the Navi tells you you're going to die, you can bet on that. That's a good time to take out a life insurance policy. You're going to collect on that life insurance policy. And he does die the next day, but he doesn't die immediately in the battle. And similar to the story with Avimelech, Shaul says to his armor bearer, says, please kill me. Why? He's afraid that the enemy would take him and torture him. And we'll see, this is a very important source in Halacha L'maisa for what you can and cannot do in this, quote, assisted suicide realm. His armor bearer refused. Below over no say chelov ki yore biyod. His armor